Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel and Kim, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. On today's Tour Catch-Up,
Djokovic racks up title 89 in Tel Aviv.
Krejcikova cruises to the title in Tallinn.
And Iga Świątek pulls out of the Billie Jean King Cup finals.
Chris, today is the 3rd of October and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. We have had a bunch of 250s over the last week or so. We've got a hat trick of ATP and WTA 500s as well to look forward to this week. Unfortunately, Kim is not here. She is not feeling particularly great. I tried to speak to her earlier and it was just silence. Her voice has completely gone. And she was in, unfortunately, no fit state to record, which is a bit of a shame because big celebrations here. It is our 300th episode as a tennis podcast. Unbelievable scenes, but we're going to be putting the celebrations on ice until Kim is back, hopefully next week, where we can all celebrate as a three.
Absolutely. I think Kim is just trying to get out of my particularly nasty 300-themed par for the courts, which will be next week. Kim, in case you're listening.
I was so looking forward to it because it was going to be, you know, head-to-head Joel versus Kim, something we had never done before. Well, unless we have had some quizzes where, to be fair, Kim has pretty much kind of shown me up each time. But this genuinely felt like I'm going to have to wait another week for the Joel versus Kim edition for par for the courts.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will just make it even more exciting for you, Joel, that extra week of anticipation. But I have got a question for you later.
Oh, okay. Okay.
A more traditional par for the courts.
Okay,
that we can see.
I'm nervous. Well, I've got an extra week to research, which, to be fair, I probably need because I feel like Kim is just, she's just got all the knowledge. But get well soon, Kim, from myself and Chris at Tennis Weekly.
Yes, indeed.
But The show must go on. And we, again, have lots and lots of tennis to talk about. Tel Aviv, Sofia, Seoul, Tallinn. Tallinn, where the president of Estonia turned up to, which was incredible, in that semi-final against Kanepi
and Kontaveit,
which was great. And Parma as well. So we've got five tournaments. I mean, before we get into talking about the finals and the champions, what was your highlight? What was your one highlight of the week?
I would have to say the highlight would be when Sloane Stephens managed to get through that first round encounter despite being stung by a bee in that third set.
That did happen.
She said, wow, it was not pleasant, does not recommend it. But joking aside, I think for me it would probably be the Estonians and the performance they put on. I think it's great to see that Estonian tennis was able to put on a show in Tallinn. I think that was something that was great. And I think it's also good to see Kontaveit playing well again. I think she's had a lot of matches where I don't think she's been aggressive enough or playing the sort of tennis she played at the end of last year. So it was great to see her really hitting the ball hard. And I just thought it was great to see some of those rallies between Krejcikova and her, especially, even though it didn't quite go her way. And we'll talk about that later. But for me, it's with the Estonians. What about you, Joel?
Yeah, I mean, similar theme, actually. I was impressed this week, or what really, what I was really thankful to see was just players who have not been in great form for what I would say is like the majority of the season, actually doing something. And I'd put Kontaveit into that category. You know, we saw it at the US Open.
You're talking about Djokovic as well, Joel, maybe? Djokovic hasn't done much this year.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's for different reasons. But I'm thinking more, Kontaveit, of course, you know, she crashed out to Serena Williams at the US Open. She was, you know, she's been like the, you know, she was like world number two, and everyone was like, you know, she might be in the rankings, but she's not, certainly not playing like it. So again, it was great to see her, you know, do so well in her home tournament. But Barbora Krejcikova as well. I mean, where has she been on the singles court for the last, you know, 9 months or so? Yes, she's been great in the doubles. I think she's won what, three of the four Grand Slams this year.
Yes, exactly.
With Siniaková. But it's great to see her back winning a title. And as you said, in that final, she's completely ruthless against Kontaveit. I do wonder if the home pressure expectation maybe got to Kontaveit a little bit. But again, great to see Krejcikova doing things. Sakkari as well, getting to the final. I know her finals record is still not great. And I still don't understand how she only has one title to her name, which I learned the other day was in Rabat against Johanna Konta. And the fact that Johanna Konta is retired tells you how long ago Sakkari won her first title. But again,
I think that was a 250, right?
Yes,
well,
it was.
So she's never done it on a big stage yet.
No, exactly. So just players, I think, just actually surpassing my expectations or their form recently and doing well for themselves. And I'd add, you know, on the men's side as well, Shapovalov in Seoul, who got to the final, lost to Nishioka, who had a fantastic run all the way through. But yeah, I'd put him in that category as well. Had a great win over Brooksby in the semi-finals. So yeah, for me, it was players who, again, I've just been like, why haven't we seen this form for X period of time? And yeah, it's been great to see them, you know, bring it out this week.
Yeah, they've been waiting, I think, until some of the big names aren't playing to bring out their best tennis in the 250 week. I think it's given a lot of players the opportunity to get some matches under their belt, especially players like Shapovalov, who was really struggling to get match wins and so hot and cold this year. And Krejcikova, as you say, she hasn't really turned up on the singles court. She's been playing herself back into form, and all it takes is a 250, Joel, and you can get yourself back into the winner's circle.
I think that's what's so interesting about Krejcikova's run, because you do think, oh, it's a 250 and it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be as loaded as like a more high profile tournament. But you look at Krejcikova's run, you know, to the final, she defeated Belinda Bencic in the semi-finals. She defeated Haddad Maia in the quarterfinals, came through Marta Kostuk and Alia Tomjanovic in the first round as well. I mean, it wasn't that bottom half. It wasn't a walk in the park for her to get through to the final. And then, as I say, to then go on and defeat Kontaveit in front of her home crowd, for me, that was a very tough draw she got dealt with. And arguably, to me, made it all the more surprising that she came through that with flying colours, only dropped one set en route against Bencic in the semis, and was just playing fantastic tennis in the final.
She's back in business. As you say, I mean, for a 250 week, she did not have an easy draw. I mean, Tomjanovic has obviously had two quarterfinals this year at Grand Slams, and that was a 6-1, 7-6 result. So she obviously was able to completely outplay her in that first set. And it's, what a week for her. I think that semi-final could have gone sort of either way.
Yeah.
And that could have probably decided the match.
Bencic's quietly having a good season, isn't she?
It's bubbling under. It's not hitting the heights, but she is getting some results in. I think she's still top 20 in the race, but she hasn't really built off that Olympic success in the way that I think I thought she would have.
Yeah, she's been there or thereabouts, but yeah, not necessarily quite hit those heights. I mean, the Estonia Open has been fantastic, I think. It's been great watching some of it on TV and seeing the crowds there, really enthusiastic. I mean, it was amazing we actually even got an all-Estonian semi-final, I think. You know, I know we're talking about Kontaveit kind of living, you know, finally living up to, you know, she was the top seed here and getting to the semis. But Kaia Kanepi as well. I mean, she was unseeded. She had Yelena Ostapenko in the first round, and I mean, it did end in a bagel, which probably doesn't surprise a lot of people in that third set. But given Kaia Kanepi's kind of longevity in tennis, again, for me, it just made it just an incredible achievement just to have an all-Estonian ladies semi-final matchup. The fact that the president came out as well, it just added such gravitas to the situation, which I think is amazing. It just shows, I think, how much kind of tennis can be, you know, appreciated. And, you know, arguably, I think a lot of people might look at some of these events on paper and think, oh, it, you know, it's just a 250. Like, that's not, you know, that's not that interesting. I'm only here for the, you know, the Masters events and the Grand Slams. But actually, tournaments like this, and we'll get onto it in a sec, Tel Aviv as well, it just showed that, you know, a lot of people care, and just, they can just bring great atmospheres to these smaller environments and just create these really, really great spectacles.
Yeah, I think people in these slightly smaller locations on the tour are genuinely really happy to see some live tennis. Mm. I think tennis is growing in profile. I mean, it's so televised now that I think it must be great to get some action and see it up close. Yeah, and especially with the success of Kontaveit and Kanepi, I think it's something where you wouldn't want to play against them, particularly in the Billie Jean King Cup, if they were in the finals.
I mean, talking, you just spoke about Krejcikova and how she, you know, only dropped one set to becoming champion. Well, a player who did better than that and dropped zero sets, surprise, surprise, Novak Djokovic in Tel Aviv.
Mm.
Top seed, came through Andujar, Pospisil, Safulin in the semi-finals. And then we had, I think this was a US Open final at one stage, Novak Djokovic, Marin Cilic in a 250 final. Again, a sort of a matchup you just would not expect, I feel, at this level. And again, just a great event. Some interesting trophy designs, it must be said, for the champion and the runner-up. But yeah, just another great event. And I mean, I don't feel the surprise there in terms of Djokovic coming through, but at the same time, it's still very, very impressive. I mean, he has had a long break. I think, you know, it's 80 plus days since he's been on the, you know, he's been on the tour. But yeah, a very, very promising kind of return to the ATP tour for him.
Yeah, I think that was a semi-final at the US Open.
Oh, sorry.
Djokovic, I think it was. But yeah, it begs the question, if Djokovic was able to or was put himself in a position where he'd be able to play, I mean, he can dismantle any field, really. He did have that sort of wobble against Felix last week at the Labour Cup, but I mean, it's clear that he is playing well. He's got his eyes on the prize, which is the end of season championships for him. That's why he's still sort of playing. And, you know, Djokovic playing in a 250 is something that is very, very rare to see someone of his sort of abilities playing in one of these sort of smaller tournaments. And
do you think there's like some sort of strategy there? I mean, he's on 89 titles at the moment. To you, does it feel like it's inevitable he's going to hit 100 like Roger Federer has? I think Rafa's on 92. Jimmy Connors is the outright leader, I think, with 109. Do you think, you know, Djokovic is, you know, of course, you know, he wants to ease himself back in, and you know, he's obviously been looking at taking wild cards and just being in these events. But is there a part of you that is thinking like, oh, he's in these events because, you know, this is a good opportunity for him to, you know, make the most of this kind of post, you know, US Open swing and get the numbers in and inevitably, I think, hit that century of titles that I think, you know, he should be looking at as one of his achievements that he's yet to do, but certainly I think is on the horizon.
Yeah, I think he probably was there to try and pick up some form and see how his body recovers between kind of matches and playing regularly on the tour again. I think we've seen him play in some matches earlier in the year where he hasn't always played at his best level. So how much is he chasing 100 titles? I think given the nature of kind of not being able to play in some of these big tournaments, I think that might be sort of on the back burner in terms of the thought process. I think it's about getting some form. I think probably there was a pretty hefty fee coming to Tel Aviv. I think it will be a place that he hasn't played before, which is probably an appeal of playing somewhere like that. But if he was chasing the numbers, I think he might have played a few more tournaments in a few more smaller locations this
Very
year.
True.
And
Very
he could
true.
Be he could be the Casper Ruud of the 250s this year if he really wanted to.
Well, it was interesting because I was reading he, despite having played relatively little tennis this year compared to some of his some of the other players around him in the rankings, he is the first male to have won a title this year on hard grass and clay. So you know, he's won it on all the three main surfaces. So, you know, he's again just having a very kind of good season, and in a different sort of way. And I think
unconventional season, unconventional, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what I quite liked though was I don't know if you saw this clip on social media. He decided to play some wheelchair tennis, and there was a rally that he got involved in where he just jumped out of the wheelchair against his opponent and just hit a forehand drive volley down the line. Gave his opponent absolutely no chance. It was all very friendly in an
sounds
exhibition
sounds a bit like
style.
His disqualification from the US Open, you know, hitting the ball very hard at someone who wasn't in position to get away.
Yeah, it was just quite funny though, because I just thought it was just like, you just know the Djokovic haters would just been like, oh, he's being so unfair and unsportsmanlike. How dare he, you know, play tricks on his wheelchair opponent? But yeah, I just thought that was quite funny.
I was gonna say, Joel, I think we have to, in honor of Kim as well, the only other player, male or female, to win a title on every surface this year. Did you see who that was?
Ooh,
I've given you a little spoiler.
I'm not sure.
It's Caroline Garcia.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, winning in Warsaw. I think she then won. Was it Birmingham? No, she didn't win in Birmingham. Was it? No, it wasn't Birmingham. That was Hadid Meyer. Maybe it was over in Holland. But she has indeed won on...
Chris, I feel like Kim would be in my ear right now just saying Caroline Garcia, Caroline Garcia, Caroline Garcia. But yeah. But it was also a good week for Liam Brody. Got through to the quarterfinals. It was a little bit disappointing because he wasn't able to step out on court against Marin Cilic. But that was a good result, I think, for him. You know, coming through qualifying and making the quarters. Very handy win against Botic van der Zandschulp, which, I'm not going to lie, Chris, did make me think Cam Norrie needs to get on the phone to Liam Brody in terms of getting a result on him, because, you know, Botic van der Zandschulp did what he did for, you know, the Netherlands in the Davis Cup a few weeks ago. But yeah, it was a good result for him. And yeah, it was a bit of a mixed bag for the Brits overall this week, because we had Cam Norrie and also Dan Evans in action, and in Seoul even. And yeah, Cam Norrie was going along fine, second seed, quarterfinal against Jensen Brooksby. Unfortunately, had to retire or concede because he tested positive for COVID and wasn't able to take to the court. So that was sort of disappointing, because I felt he was, you know, just coming quite nicely through the draw. And then Dan Evans as well. I mean, Nishioka is just a player he just does not want to play against, is it?
He has one of the worst records, I think maybe his worst head-to-head. He's 6-0 and he's lost to him four times this year.
I don't
in
understand.
Career, Washington,
I
Miami.
I don't understand.
And the AO. I mean, Shapovalov said that he's a really tricky player to play, and that's kind of the biggest compliment you can give. But if you're Dan Evans, he's not getting closer either to beating him. So, I mean, maybe he's watching the matches back and he's kind of not able to figure it out. But I think it might be to do with the patience that you have to have, because Nishioka, he really does make you beat him. And it's something where if you're going for some of the less percentage play, then it definitely isn't a matchup that he particularly enjoys. But Dan's had for both Brits. I mean, Dan hasn't had the season he would have necessarily hoped for. And Norrie, this is definitely a big blow. He's had to pull out of Tokyo as well. He is currently number 8 in the race, but that's number 9 because of Djokovic. And if you've won a Grand Slam, and all you have to do to qualify is be in the top 20 positions in the ATP race. So it's touch and go. And a lot of players will be getting the chance to play at the 500s this week. So that is a really big blow for him. And you think that based on how he's played this year, it would be a big shame if he lost out because of a bout of COVID towards the end of the season after putting together a really solid year.
Yeah, because it sort of disrupted him, didn't it? I think at the beginning of the season, where he had a bit of a slow start, you know, was interrupting his training block. So yeah, I think he'll obviously be very frustrated about that happened. And also, just looking at the top of the draw, Casper Ruud as well. You know, he was one of the victims to Nishioka in Seoul.
There were many, the Joel. There were many, I mean,
there
in
were
Seoul,
many,
weren't there?
There were a lot. But
everyone was a victim of Nishioka.
But for Casper Ruud, the implications of it was that Rafael Nadal, who, you know, hasn't needed to take to the court, is back up to world number two, given Ruud falling in the quarters to Nishioka. So a little bit of a surprise there. But Nishioka's been in some decent form this week, so it's great to see him, I think, come through, you know, and win a title. He had Shapovalov in the final, came through in straight sets. Shapovalov, interestingly, similar to Sakkari, is he even the male Sakkari? His record in finals is not very good either. So unfortunate for him. Great for him to get to the final because of his, you know, don't think he's been living up to his ranking really over the last few months, several months really now. But good win for Nishioka to come through all the way through to the final.
Yeah, I think he did play really well. Obviously, kind of, I think his last title was a long time ago. I think it's maybe 4 years or something since his last title. So it just shows that these matches, especially on the tour, there are so many players that have the ability to push, as we say, like Casper Ruud, who's the world number two, and push them to three sets. And if you can get past them, it really does open it up to you in the draw. And if you're able to challenge some of those players, even on just a once a year basis, you can pick up a title. I think Heather Watson's done a bit of that, picking up the odd title here and there. And it seems like there's more opportunities to do that because the top players might not always be able to play sort of their best tennis. But yeah, great result there.
And I mean, we did have a couple of other kind of surprise title winners. Perhaps the biggest surprise of the week was at the Sofia Open. And I know we're all in mourning about Roger Federer, retiring and, you know, what that
look
means
no further
what that means for Swiss tennis. But, you know, as the old saying goes, as one door closes, another one opens. And we had Mark Andrea Hesler. Unbelievable story. Ranked 95, 26 years old, all the way through to the final, and defeats Holger Ruud in the final in straight sets, 6-4, 7-6. So, yeah, a great week that started, him defeating, really kick-starting it with that win against PCB, second seed Krenio Busta, and then Massetti in the semis. Just a phenomenal week for him that I think, a little bit of a silver lining, I think, to Swiss fans mourning kind of, the retirement of Mr. Federer.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting perspective, Joel. I think they would not be displeased with this result, obviously. I think it's the first ATP title by a Swiss male player since Federer in 2019 in Basel. So, wow. I mean, it's certainly been a little while since there's been a Swiss winner on the tour. He saved some match points on the way to getting this win. He had two match points down in his quarterfinal, and Holger had two set points in the second set tiebreak. So again, I mean, it's one which could have gone in a very different way. He could have gone out in the quarterfinals, and he said he would be happy if he'd have done that, given the form he's had this year not being that great. So it's a pretty impressive week, and shows if you just stick at it, who knows, you might be able to sometimes the odds will be on your favour, and you might be able to get yourself a title, a bit of silverware.
Yeah, and I think it was maybe potentially a little bit of luck along the way, because I thought Jannik Sinner was playing very well up till his semi-final, and had a nasty fall on the tennis court that had to retire against Holger Ruud, 5-2 down in the third set. But I think he's pulled out of wherever he was meant to play this week. Unfortunate for him, because as you said, kind of with ranking points available, you know, potentially a place, the tour finals, not an ideal time for someone like a Jannik Sinner to pick up an injury.
Definitely not. I think in the ATP race at the moment, he's somewhere around number 11. I think he's actually number 12. So that's something where you've got to be careful with that, and it's not worth, obviously, pushing yourself too much in certain situations, because if obviously it might look like it's one game away from that being a result. But if you can't put weight on it, and if you have had a nasty fall, then obviously you should stop. But not ideal at this stage of the game, especially at this stage in the season, when Sinner would really want to make the end of season finals kind of by his own right this year. So that is a shame, and you don't want to see it.
Yeah, it was not a nice, sort of like, looked like he twisted his knee, and wasn't a nice visual to watch on the TV, because yeah, he did fall quite hard.
And he's out of, as you say, he's out of Astana next this week. So that's obviously a 500, as we said, and it's a similar situation to Norrie in that situation. I think Norrie's actually just one above him at number 11 in the race. So for some players, I mean, I'm not saying that they'll be particularly pleased about this, but it does present an opportunity to get some points, because it's very, very close in terms of qualification.
And we did actually have a clay tournament, of all things, in Parma, the Parma Ladies Open, which was another 250 on the WTA tour. And we had Maya Sharif winning against Maria Sakkari, top seed in the final. Again, another straight sets victory for the unseeded Maya Sharif. And Chris, we were debating before coming on air, does this mean, are we now no longer to talk about Maya Sharif as the, like, sort of the poster girl for players who get loads of ranking points from tournaments not on the WTA tour and make a living from that, as opposed to like the WTA tour proper?
I think that she has had a habit of picking up those 125s.
Yeah.
That's definitely her bread and butter on the tour. And hopefully this is a sign that she's able to move up into the WTA tour and play some really good matches. I mean, she's had a really unfortunate season. It was after getting that win in the first round of the French Open, she was then out for, I think it was from May, end of May until, I don't think she played again until August. So she's had a pretty rough season. So it's good that she's able to get the form going again. But I mean, the question I have to ask you, Joel, is how did Maria Sakkari go to Parma 250 and not leave with a title?
I know. And I was going to tell you, because there was problems with the, obviously this being outdoor, rain was a nuisance. And it did mean that, Sharif played her semi-final and final on the same day. And compared to Sakkari, came through relatively comfortably in her semi-final against Kovanic. 7-5, 6-2. But Sharif, I think, spent like 3 hours pre-final on the tennis court against Bogdan, finally, you know, getting it done in the third set in 6-4 in the third set. And then, yeah, was literally asked like 20 minutes later to go on and play the final. And you think in that situation, you know, Sakkari is the firm favourite there, you know, given she would have been very, very, you know, much more energy, you would have thought, much more running in the legs. And again, it just goes back to that point about Sakkari. Like, she can get there or thereabouts, I feel, at the, you know, the business end of tournaments, but there's definitely like a mental barrier she has, I think, with finals specifically, that she needs to get over. And it's just not coming to fruition at the moment, because you're right, like, based on the circumstances on the day, I mean, Maya Sharif as well, not really, I would say, you know, a mainstay on the at this level of the tour. Sakkari would have just got into that match as the firm favourite.
Yeah, and it's definitely between the ears with Sakkari. I think she has shown in the number of matches that she's played and sort of high profile matches that she can't consistently keep the conviction in her game. She does lose confidence, and she does really make some errors. And she can play very passively, and that's just not how she plays. Her game is physical, and it's taking on the ball and hitting the cover off the ball. So I think it's it is a real shame. I think she will always be a maybe player who probably got a ranking higher than she probably should have. That French Open semi-final against Krejcikova, the real one that got away, I think that was really something that was on her racket. I watched her play against Ongjabeur in Rome. She was a set and something like 5-2 up, and she went into meltdown. So is this surprising? I still think it's surprising that she really couldn't get it done here. And it begs the question, especially given the season that she's had. It's obviously not been a bad season, but I feel like it would be good if she kind of had a bit of a coaching change. She's been with Tom Hill for a while now. He's got her to a certain level, but he clearly can't get, as a team, they can't get over that barrier to kind of making a major final and getting a big win in one of these major tournaments. Because otherwise it's very hard for someone to go on and play against Sakari and not think that they're going to have a great chance of winning in one of these clutch matches.
It's interesting you talk about kind of coaching setups, because again, we were speaking before the pod about Torben Belt, who has gone to what, Kontaveit's corner?
Yeah, he's with Kontaveit now. They had the swap with Raducanu. So Raducanu's now with Tursunov, who was coaching Kontaveit, and now Torben Belt is with Kontaveit, who was coaching Raducanu.
And yeah, got Kontaveit all the way through to the final. I did read, and this is, I know you're going to kind of test me after the break with a little bit of a half of the course. I actually have a little bit of a question for you, because I was reading that we know Kontaveit and her indoor streak, I think has now ended at 24 matches due to losing in the final to Krejcikova. Before Krejcikova, could you name the last player to have defeated Kontaveit on an indoor hard court?
Oh, an indoor hard court. That is a great question. So,
I could give you the tournament if that's going to help.
It would have been before St. Petersburg, because I think she won St. Petersburg and Moscow. So it would have to be quite early in the start of the year. Was it in somewhere like, was it in France somewhere? Like a Lyon or something?
Nope. It was in Ostrava last season.
Oh, I do know this. Who won Ostrava? It wasn't Sabalenka, was it?
No. They were in the Parma draw. It was,
who was it? Sara, I don't know, tell me.
Sara Cerebez Tormo. Last player to defeat Kontaveit before, yeah, Krejcikova on an indoor hardcourt. So there you go.
What year was that, 2020?
I'm not sure. I think it was last year.
She won it last year. Kontaveit
did she win it
last
year? Okay, must have been the year before. Must have been the year before then. I don't know.
Wow, who knew? Who knew that Sara Cerebez Tormo was such a fantastic indoor player?
I know, right? I mean, that's probably what
and was
makes
that match
all...
3 hours? 3 hours indoors.
Probably what makes it all the more surprising. But we're going to be taking a quick break now, but join us in the second half where we're going to be talking about the announcement of the World Tennis League, Iga Swiatek pulling out of the Billie Jean King Cup finals, as well as looking forward to a hat-trick of 500 events this week in Astana, Tokyo and Ostrava. So do not go anywhere.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Welcome back to Tennis Weekly with Joel and Kim, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. And now we are going to move on to Par for the Courts. And Chris, I do believe you have a par for the courts for me. We're not going to be doing Joel versus Kim head to head. We're going to have to save that for another day. But we can, myself and our listeners, we can still have some fun, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think I will be having the most fun with this one. I'm actually
this doesn't exposing, speak well for me, it sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I'm actually tapping into something that Joel likes. You like to talk about this a lot, and it's in honor of Krejcikova, who anyone who does any success on a doubles court and doesn't quite do as well in a couple of tournaments, Joel labels them a double specialist. And so this week's par for the courts, we'll be looking at players on the WTA tour to be ranked and hold the number one ranking for both singles and doubles at the same time.
Oh, that's a very good one. That is Where is Kim when I need her?
Well, I think we'll set par at 50%. And I can tell you that there, I'm looking for six names.
Six names to get 50% or?
Oh, no, six in total. Par is three, exactly.
Okay.
Just want to show you that this is the level it takes for Joel to respect someone as a singles and doubles player. They have to be ranked number one in both, I believe.
Right. Okay.
Am I giving you any? I don't think I'm going to give you. I'll give you one life to play with.
Okay. Oh, thank you, kind sir, for my one life.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't use it on the first go.
Right. I'm going to have to start with Serena Williams.
That is a correct answer.
I want to say Martina Hingis.
Correct.
Oh, come on.
You need one to make par.
I want to say Barbora Krejcikova. Barbora Krejcikova.
I have to say, unfortunately, that is not a correct answer.
Oh, okay. She's not been world number one in singles, has she? She got to
She's been as high as number two, correct.
Yeah. Oh, this is so tense now. It is tense.
It is very tense.
I've got a few names going through my head. I'm gonna say this person, and they come up on the podcast quite a bit, and I know she used to be quite handy on a doubles court. And I'm pretty sure she got to world number one in singles. Or maybe, did she? I'm going to say it anyway. Kim Clijsters?
Kim Clijsters is the correct answer.
Come on! I was not confident on that. Yes. It was, what, with Justine Henin or someone else maybe? I'm not sure.
With Ai Sugiyama was her partner.
Oh, yes, Ai Sugiyama. Yes.
Indeed, indeed.
Actually, she was quite a handy singles and doubles player in her time.
She was indeed. She had that great win against Hingis at Wimbledon, Ai Sugiyama.
I honestly was running on fumes out. I couldn't give you any more.
Shall I tell you the rest of the list?
Yes.
We had Martina Navratilova.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
We had Lindsay Davenport, who is a very underrated doubles player. He's had a lot of success.
Yes, I was thinking about Davenport, yeah.
And then the final answer was Arantxa Sanchez Vicario,
who was
also number one in both. So I didn't necessarily know that about Sanchez Vicario, but the other ones, I reckon you had a good shot at.
I was thinking about Davenport. I was a toss-up between saying Davenport and Clijsters. I wasn't necessarily confident, but yes, very good.
The double threat. That's what's required for Joel to respect you again.
Quite happy.
Simultaneously,
I am quite happy
it.
That I have actually achieved par for the courts. We do have, of course, a Tennis Weekly mailbag, and this week's mailbag is from Phil on email, and he put a very simple, very direct question to us at Tennis Weekly HQ. They asked, Is the end of season championships still a priority for top players? So what do you make of this? What do you make of this, Chris? When this came in, what did you think? I mean, I feel like it's a very simple yes or no answer. Is it a definitive yes or no answer to you, or is it a it depends on who you are sort of answer?
I think it's a very interesting question. We do talk about the part-time players, and you have to play throughout a whole season to qualify.
Unless you're Novak Djokovic.
Unless you're Novak Djokovic. But you still have to be top 20 in terms of you've got to play tournaments. And I think that someone like Osaka, she has never really made it a priority, the end-of-season championships, even when she's won majors in those years. Serena skipped it many times. Halep just skipped it because she went for... I think she had a surgery and she chose to end her season earlier. I think it's one where for players who work hard all year, it is definitely a priority. Mm. I don't think it has the same kind of gravitas and significance as it always has done, because not all the top players are always there, and that is the whole point of the event. I think Nadal is obviously the one thing he hasn't managed to win. So I guess if it's the final thing in the trophy cabinet that you're missing, it's a priority. But is it still a priority? I think majors and peaking at majors, and especially for sort of the big three, I think it was the priority to get majors, and that will always be number one. And I think if you ask people, would they rather win end of season championships or Indian Wells or Miami, I think they would say end of season championships, but it's definitely not the event it once was.
No, and I don't think, yeah, for me, kind of, obviously there's lots of prize money, you know, attached with the end of season championships. But yeah, for me, it's very much a kind of a, I look at it like a survival of the fittest type tournament. You know, that's why for me, like, you know, Rafa's never, I mean, he has got to a few finals, but he's never traditionally, you know, been there. And as you said, he's not, you know, won it. And the thing is as well, I know this sounds like me stating the obvious, but there's only one of these every year. Like, it's very infrequent compared to, you know, Grand Slams. Well, of course, there's, you know, for top players, there's, that's four big opportunities there. And, you know, for me, it's like a take it or leave it, you know, towards the end of the season. And, you know, if I'm in good form and, you know, want to continue it through, and, you know, I want to make the most of other players perhaps, you know, skipping it or, you know, having different priorities, then, yeah, certainly I think it's an opportunity to get ranking points and make, you know, decent, very decent kind of prize money. But I just think, yeah, for the top players who are looking at, you know, to be defined by kind of how many Grand Slams that they've won, I think, yeah, perhaps it's not so much. But yeah, it's a...
We see a lot of alternates as well, don't we, Joel? There's always a lot of alternates, and it's something where if it's billed as the tournament where all of the best players from the year come together and play against each other, when you don't have the world number one, like when Serena has skipped it a few times or Ash Barty skipped it a few times, it's not really sort of the battle royale that it should be. So I think people now prioritize, as you say, survival of the fittest, they prioritize their health and their preseason probably over the end of season championships. But I mean, it's been a theme this week with Iga, hasn't it, Joel? With Iga's prioritizing the end of season championships, the WTA finals in Fort Worth, over the Billie Jean King Cup.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, it's interesting because, you know, she's spoken about how, I mean, they're just on the other side, pretty much on the other sides of the world, you know.
Glasgow and Fort Worth. It's not a regular flight,
no,
is it?
Completely different continents. And the, you know, the days, I think, you know, I think it's the end of season finals for the women literally ends the day before the Billie Jean King Cup finals starts. So, you know, Świątek came out on her Instagram stories and, you know, was, you know, just said this very honestly: I was thinking it through a lot and discussing it with my team all over again, but I will not be able to play at the Billie Jean King Cup in Glasgow, and it makes me sad. I'm very sorry, because I play for Poland whenever it's possible and I always give it my best. Playing in Poland this year was an honour, and I hoped to do this again at the end of the season. I'm disappointed that tennis governing bodies didn't come to an agreement on something as basic as the calendar of tournaments, giving us only one day to travel through the globe and changing the time zone. This situation is not safe for our health and could cause injury. I'm going to talk to the WTA and ITF in order to change something. This situation is difficult not only for the players like me, but mainly for the tennis fans that support our sport. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. She's talked about it in terms of like safety and player welfare. To me, was like kind of what quite struck me about that. That statement. And yeah, it's hard not to disagree with her. And it does feel like it feels like we're blurring the end of the season and the start of the season with all of these team events kind of coming in that are just sort of latching on after what for me is like the, you know, should be kind of the showstopper or the full stop on the season, which is the, you know, is is the end of season finals. And, you know, it feels like it's getting to a point where it's getting a little bit silly and it's getting a little bit out of control. I mean, we're going to be talking about in a minute, the World Tennis League, which has seemingly come out of nowhere, which is going to come up for its first edition in Dubai. But yeah, we're getting more and more blurred, it feels like, between November and December.
Does the season end, Joel?
I know, big philosophical question. Are we just, is it like golf? Is tennis becoming like golf?
I think it might be. It feels like we get more in, we're more into the hype of the next season that we kind of want to skip to that before we've actually rounded off of this season. And especially with these other tournaments, it feels like, yeah, tennis players, they talk about the season being too long and then they play all these tournaments in warm up for the next season. And, you know, it's there's also like there's a few other warm ups that always happen.
The one with like Raducanu and Jabeur in
Abu Dhabi. Yep, exactly. There's always these tournaments that happen. And I think that because they have the big names there as well, that might get, if you get a big player playing in one of those and they don't play the end of season finals, well, that does put into question. But I do think on the Iga thing, I think it's perfectly reasonable. Last time we were at the Billie Jean King Cup, Joel, we saw Krejcikova struggle through.
Yeah, she's knackered.
They were trying to protect her. They were definitely trying to protect her at that point of the season ahead of Guadalajara.
She just did not have
a
good tournament.
She had to fly out.
She just did not have a good tournament, did she?
Yeah, she didn't have a good tournament either. She did pick up the doubles title with Siniaková, but you're not doing a good thing. The WTA aren't doing a good thing by their top players by making them choose that. They're making both events, pitting them against
each
other.
And also the fact that this has come out so early from the world number one in the women's game. I mean, it's just for me.
Yeah, and she wants to be there. She wants to be at both.
Yeah, exactly. But it's this, you know, I think the sad thing for fans is that because this has come out, and you know, I don't disagree with what Świątek has said, but it's gonna, you know, it makes it almost kind of like fair game, I think, to everyone, you know, to all the other players, you know, who will also, I think, be going through this, you know, decision. And I think, you know, this is the tricky thing about tennis being such a global sport as it is. It's just very hard for, you know, sometimes the practicalities and logistics, and especially, you know, the conversation about the environment and, you know, the, you know, being a responsible traveler all over the world. I feel like it just calls into these questions even more so. And you know, it makes it challenging for players when the reality is they should be making it as easy as possible.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And maybe it's leaning towards, you know, the United Cup we spoke about last time, replacing the ATP Cup. It's obviously at the start of the season. And maybe it's a case where those sorts of events and combined events, like the ones that we're about to talk about, maybe that's where the interest is. And maybe it's more sustainable. And gradually we are shifting away from, you know, the traditional Fed Cup and Davis Cup formats into single events, because players don't want to commit to, you know, playing multiple ties across the season in the same way that they used to on a pretty regular basis.
I mean,
so
the Billie Jean King Cup finals, I mean, tickets for it only went on sale like the other week. You know, for an event that, you know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, it's in a big you know, arena. There's going to be lots of, you know, seating available. But, you know, to me, again, that just suggests like it's been very much, you know, put on the back burner, maybe not verging on like last, you know, putting on kind of last minute, but you know, it feels like it's you know, not given the kind of the praise and the stature I think it deserves. And I think it's hard to gonna generate interest, you know, for that with, you know, having only opened, you know, ticket sales to the general public. And perhaps again, players are just a bit like, you know, this is just being made on the fly, and you know, I've got to sort my schedule out, you know, months in advance. I need to know what I'm doing. And maybe there's a little bit of kind of, you know, just not kind of feeling it.
Do you think it's to do with the fact that they have all the difficulties around the exclusion of China from the calendar, and they couldn't get, obviously, the Fort Worth location was quite late, and maybe it's to do with scheduling of places that can put on these sorts of events, and that it probably isn't necessarily the WTA not putting player safety first. It's more that they have these big commitments to these big tournaments, and they are without venues for both of them at one point. So it's definitely a balancing act.
It always feels like, you know, the first half of the season, it's always very set, and I sort of know like what it is in my head.
Stand.
Exactly. But you get more and more into the season, it becomes more and more murkier, and you kind of don't know what's going on. And this leads me to, this World Tennis League that has been set up, first edition, in Dubai at the Coca-Cola Arena. This is going to be a brand new exhibition event in December from the 19th to the 24th. It's got a mix of players playing it from the ATP and WTA tour. So Novak Djokovic and Iga Świątek are going to be there. Nick Kyrgios is going to be there. Rybakina is going to be there, as is Simona Halep. So there's going to be 16 players competing across singles and mixed doubles matches, which will only be two sets. This caught me off guard a little bit, because I mean I know we've feel like we've got kind of team events coming out the ears at the moment, but this is just a very much a shameless kind of cash in on the interest in mixed events at the moment. And, you know, the fact that we've got the United Cup, which is sort of like the official version. For me, this is almost kind of like the unofficial version. And it's maybe not bordering on the comicalness of like the Indian Premier Tennis League. But for me, it's certainly getting towards that way.
Yeah, I think the International Premier Tennis League, when that happened in 2014, 2016.
was wild, by the way.
That was a very odd one. I followed that closely because Daniela Hantchikova was on the Singapore Slammers. She's got no ties to Singapore.
I feel like you had to follow it closely to understand all the rules.
You definitely did. And they were on court with all sorts of different players. I think she played a mixed doubles with Federer, and she did something else. And there were some special points that they had for different things. It was all very hard to keep track of. But I guess I'd ask, what benefit would there be of this tournament to the top
Money.
Players
surely
playing nine that's all yeah. I think it is, really. I think you know, playing the 19th to 24th December, I think that's a very odd time to be doing this sort of tournament, and I think it's time when we'll see how the players fare who do play in this, if they do have a pre-season, that obviously this does break up what normally would be the off-season, and we'll see how they do in terms of the difference between having the rest and having a proper preseason, or kind of staying match fit. But they'll all get good at a champions tiebreak by the sounds of it, with the, the 10 set, champions tiebreak to finish the two set matches.
It's interesting because, you know, just thinking about the, you know, the Billie Jean King Cup, you've got this and then the United Cup, and it's like, you know, the Billie Jean King is at the end of a season. This is at the start of the next season. And, you know, I feel like the rationale here is like, right, the United Cup is coming up, and there's going to be ranking points available. So I'm going to, you know, this could be an opportunity to gel with, you know, potentially with some compatriots. Whereas the Billie Jean King Cup finals, that's been like a, you know, for some, I imagine like a long slog over the season. And yeah, it's just very hard, I think, to, you know, if you've not been invested in it from the beginning, if you're kind of a top player and you've had other commitments, I feel like it's just hard to just sort of get involved with it.
I do always think that and we saw this a lot with players like Sharapova over the years, or Serena and Venus, where they want to play the Olympics, so they have to play a certain number of times for the country. And so I kind of feel like that's a little bit how sometimes it is with the Billie Jean King Cup, and what formerly known as the Fed Cup, and the Davis Cup, is that you have to do a certain amount to qualify and be able to be picked for those tournaments. historically that's how it used to work. And obviously now it's much more on ranking and then how many players you're able to have for the Olympics, for example. But it's an odd one, isn't it? I do think I really love it when a player like Danielle Collins, for example, she got asked kind of why she was excited to be there. And she said, if my country asked me to play, I will be there. Like, I will turn up every single time, I'll take the call. And that's not the attitude of everybody. And I think it is, you put number one before, you know, you put the team effort. So that isn't what it's all about. And I think that's why it's suffering, because there is a very big personal agenda and a very big legacy agenda for a lot of these top players. Like, you don't see playing in these tournaments anymore. So it's, I don't know how you get around it, but I don't think the answer is the World Tennis League. I don't think that is making
anything better. I'll be asking for my money up front, I think, for an event maybe like that, given, I think, the fallout, or one of the fallouts anyway, from the Indian Premier Tennis League. But, you know, looking closer to home, looking at the events next week, I say we've got a hat-trick of 500s in Astana, Tokyo and Ostrava. Or should I say Ostrava, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. We've also got the Monastir 250 as well in Tunisia. Draws are already out, plays already underway. What are you looking forward to? What are you looking forward to from this week coming on the tours?
Well, I think it's got to be, I'm very excited to see how some of the players from who did well at the 250s, it's almost like the warm-up act last week was the 250s for these 500s. And I think I'll be watching some of Nishioka playing in Japan, obviously his home country. That would be an exciting one to see if he can back that up. He's currently the Japanese number one, and he's obviously got some form. So
it's quite a nice draw, I think, for like a 500 level. It's certainly, I feel, not as packed as the Astana draw.
Oh yeah, and also like the Ostrava draw is also packed. So I think it's a good draw to be in, and I think there will be some good matches. I mean, I'm always interested to see how Nick Kyrgios does. he's returning to the tour, and I think we'll see. Does he want to be there? We'll have to see.
I'm just envisaging now the sort of mild-mannered, you know, Japanese fans in the crowd, and how they're going to react to someone like Nick Kyrgios, you know, if he combusts on the tennis court.
They do. I mean, I think it could be you know, one of those matches you don't expect, and then suddenly he becomes like, you know, a bit of an icon over there potentially. Yep. But he's an unknown quantity. And then the other match that I'll be having a look at will be the Raducanu Kasatkina match. That is their first round in Ostrava. But what about you, Joel?
Well, I'm interested in Astana, because Carlos Alcaraz, world number one Carlos Alcaraz, which sounds strange,
doesn't it?
I'm not used to it. I know he's been on the tennis court since his US Open triumph, but I believe this is his first like ATP tour tournament after, you know, those US Open exploits. So I'm interested to see how he gets on. I mean, he was meant to face Holger Rune in the first round, and there was a lovely photo of them playing doubles together as, I don't know, like 16-year-olds, as juniors growing up. But unfortunately, Holger Rune has had to withdraw. So Alcaraz, I think, is playing David Goffin, lucky loser.
He is the lucky loser, indeed.
In the first round. But yeah, I'm curious to see how Alcaraz gets on as this newly bestowed, you know, world number one. And in particular, as I say, in Astana, with a draw that for me is pretty packed. I mean, the top four seeds are Alcaraz, Medvedev, Tsitsipas, and number four seed wildcard Novak Djokovic.
I mean, it just makes a mockery of the ranking system, doesn't it? Seeing the number four next to Novak Djokovic is a very odd thing to see. Yeah, I think it will be good to see. Do you think that Carlos will live up to his seeding in Kazakhstan?
I think so.
I think he's
still on a high. You know, we'll have to obviously wait and see. But I've got a good feeling. But there's no Andy Murray. Andy Murray was going to take a wild card, but he decided to give it back. I believe it's more of a change in his scheduling as opposed to anything injury.
Not, he's had too related. Many World Cups.
I know. I was thinking everyone will be loving the fact. All the wild card haters will be loving the fact that he actually returned it. So, yeah, we'll have to see how they get on. But I hope you've enjoyed listening to this latest catch up with Tennis Weekly with Joel and Chris this week. Chris, any final thoughts? What have you got any Raducanu Kasatkina? You brought that up. What are you thinking? Give me a prediction.
Well, I think the last time we saw Kasatkina, wasn't she out on an outside court playing against Harriet Dart over at the US yes. Open? So I think that Emma will probably have got some tips from Harriet Dart going into that one. I think Emma's gonna get that one. I think she's really putting together some good form. Is she injured? What's going on? The last time we saw her, she did have to pull out of
I
that.
I don't know.
So those two, who knows what will happen, but hopefully it'll be a good contest. And then I do think we have to give a shout out to Ons Jabeur, who's obviously playing in the first tournament of this level they've had in Tunisia at the Jasmine Open in Monastir. So that is going to be a tournament where it feels a little bit like when Iga went to Warsaw, where anything less than the title will be a pretty unfortunate result. Yeah. Yes, so we'll have to see. But great for Tunisian tennis.
Exactly. But we'll have to wait and see how Ons Jabeur, whether she lives up to the billing. But listeners, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this latest catch up with Tennis Weekly. Remember to subscribe to us on whatever device you listen to us on. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. You can also listen to us on the DownloadTennis.com app. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can follow us on social media and email the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. It's at Tennis Weekly Pod. You can email us at tennisweeklypod@gmail.com. Or check out the website, www.tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next week at Tennis Weekly HQ for our latest tour catch-up, our 300th proper. Hopefully Kim will be back as well. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.